You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastian.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
I think the earlier you can get your kid outside, the more comfortable you both are. You're like, oh, diaper change. No big deal. Oh, we're going to breastfeed in the middle of this archery hunt. Nah, it's not a big deal. Like, you just kind of go with the flow. And as they get older, you've already done all this stuff versus waiting until they're 3 or 4 to start taking them camping or going outside and hunting. And then you've had this routine for so long, and then it feels so out of your routine to suddenly be doing these things.
Hey, Bird Dog Babes. My name is Courtney Bastian, and I am obsessed with all things bird dogs. And I'm here to share with you the stories, experiences, knowledge, and opinions from the women and a few guys in the industry that are killing it. I'm a Wisconsin girl living in a Montana world, mom and 2 incredible kiddos, wife and occasional assistant to a pro gun dog trainer, traveling the U.S. talking about canine nutrition while hunting, raising, and competing with my German wire hair pointers and Brocchi Italiano. As someone who started hunting later in life because I wanted to give my dogs the opportunity to do what they were bred to do, I'm here to help inspire, educate, and connect women to get their bird dogs out in the field and experience a bond like no other. So pour yourself a glass of wine and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. Patreon patrons, mark your calendars for Thursday, March 18th at 7:30 Central Standard Time. We are celebrating 1 year of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. Whoop whoop! We're having happy hour with an Ask Me Anything session. Oh boy. Some pretty cool giveaways and a big announcement. There's some exciting stuff in the works, and you're going to be the first ones to hear about it. Head over to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe to join us next Thursday, March 18th. My guest today is Lauren Stamm. Lauren and her family self-sustain year-round with their harvested wild game and produce from their amazing garden. She joins me in this episode to discuss how she shares her passion for the outdoors and bird hunting with her son, gear and safety tips for hunting with a toddler, as well as her experience this past season as a first-time bird dog owner. We don't often hear people sharing the struggles they have and the learning curve involved with their first hunting companion, yet it's something we all experience, and not just with our first ones. So I appreciate Lauren bringing this to light and her dedication to learning and to get her dog trained before next season. All right, let's get after it. This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan. What makes a great bird dog is genetics, training, and nutrition, and that's why I trust and feed Purina Pro Plan. With over 500 nutritionists, veterinarians, and scientists on staff, Pro Plan delivers a full spectrum of performance and specialized dog food formulas to help bird dogs like yours excel at every stage of life. Purina supports us, the breeders, owners and trainers, the events we compete in, our national breed clubs, canine health research, and our committed partners to conservation groups such as Pheasants Forever, Rough Grouse Society, and Ducks Unlimited. 95 out of the top 100 dogs are fueled by the advanced nutrition of Purina Pro Plan. This episode is also presented by Boss Shot Shells. Copper-plated bismuth Boss provides a better, more effective non-lead option than steel and are safe to use in Grandpa's gun. Available in 10, 12, 16, 20, 28-gauge, and 410, direct-to-consumer pricing and cases ship right to your door. Shoot Boss, pattern your shotgun to make more clean and ethical shots, reduce crippling, and remove lead from the uplands, wetlands, and all lands. Find out more at BossShotShells.com. A big shout out to the people and the partners that are helping me to keep the MP3s rolling for this podcast. My Patreon patrons, the bread and butter, the peeps, the community of like-minded individuals that are eager to learn and offer to contribute. Join us for $5 per month on Patreon.com/TheBirdDogBabe for exclusive discounts, content, and live Q&A sessions. 5% of your contribution goes to the AKC Canine Health Foundation, and another 5% goes to conservation. Dakota 283, unparalleled protection for your dog's travel to and from your next adventure. My favorite is the G3 kennel, which has a recessed handle on top that makes it easy for me to lift in and out of my truck. The keyed panel latching door makes me feel at ease on trips when I have to leave dogs in my truck when I stop for fuel. An added bonus is the drain hole in the back, which makes cleaning a breeze when my dog has been run hard and put away wet. Go to Dakota283.com and use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. And by Siren, shotguns for women. Siren carries the only full line of women's shotguns. They are dedicated to providing the equipment and knowledge that make shooting and hunting more enjoyable and less stressful. Newer seasoned hunter, Siren offers multiple options that fit right out of the box. No more compromises. Go to SirenUSA.com and check out all the options available for upland, waterfowl, sporting, and trap shotguns. And while you're there, say hello to Julia, Siren's new 12-gauge sporting that is one of the most stunning shotguns I've laid my eyes on. Also by Big Frig, roto-molded coolers with heavy-duty latches, dual stainless steel lock plates that double as bottle openers. They also have dry boxes, tumblers, and growlers, and my favorite, the ability to customize the tumblers and coolers. Head to thebirddogbabe.com/bigfrig to view the wide array of sizes and colors available. There's a Badlands cooler perfect for your way of life. So I kind of discovered you through Instagram, actually, and seeing some of the things we have in common of our love for hunting, our carrying our babies around, and you also own a bearded bird dog. So you're like double, triple cool in my book.
Yeah. Social media has kind of been my savior because I don't know anybody in real life that hunts. Especially females that hunt birds. So it is a great way that I found connections with other people that do similar things because I don't have that connection in real life.
Right. Absolutely. So let's give the listeners a little bit of an idea here of who you are. Kick us off with, you know, you just said that you do hunt. So did you grow up hunting?
Absolutely not. I actually grew up in a almost anti-hunting family. My dad had some very, he went hunting once as a child with somebody who didn't have very good ethics, and he just had a really bad experience, and that stayed with him through life. So while my parents weren't out like protesting about hunting, anytime it came up, it was a very negative light. It was seen as something that he wouldn't want us as kids to do. And even just watching like animal shows on the Discovery Channel, my dad's very emotional and would get sad, like watching lions chase down their prey and things like that. So It's actually surprising how far I've come.
I mean, what's your parents' opinions of you hunting now?
They've actually really kind of swung full circle and understand why I do it. And my mom worries a lot about us out there, but I know she kind of like brags to her friends like, oh my, you know, my daughter only eats wild meat and she works really hard. And so she actually really appreciates it. While she's not ready to fully eat meat herself, I think just us explaining why we hunt and how we hunt, she really appreciates it.
Where do you live and what are you hunting?
So I actually live in the outskirts of Las Vegas, which isn't a common hunting area. And we are kind of jack of all trade, master of none kind of hunters. We hunt everything we can really that we would want to eat. My husband started off deer hunting, which progressed to elk hunting. And then I kind of started getting involved and we started bird hunting to kind of extend our hunting seasons. You know, something that you don't necessarily need a tag for. But currently, bird-wise, we can hunt chukar, quail, limited sage grouse. And this last season was my first dove, which was a lot of fun. And big game, we will travel, and we will travel quite a bit for any hunting. But I've shot a bighorn sheep, deer. My husband has hunted antelope, elk. So just a whole range of animals.
And how many years have you been hunting?
I think this is my fifth or sixth season.
Okay. And you started off with big game and then over the course of time transitioned to the birds?
I initially started out archery hunting. Okay. And I wanted to hunt turkeys only. And my husband kind of chuckled because archery hunting turkeys is not an easy feat.
Right. That's an interesting way to want to start. I like it. You like a good challenge.
Yeah. And I don't think I understood just how challenging it was. And I actually haven't hunted turkeys yet. He kind of talked me out of that. But in my mind, just because of my background, I struggled with the idea of killing something and taking a life, even though like I understood the reason and that it was for food. But I just had an easier time in my mind. I felt like archery was harder and that I would earn it more. So I started with archery, and I had quite a few unsuccessful. I think I actually had two unsuccessful hunts, but I learned so much and I was just sold on it. I loved it. I loved being out there. I loved stalking animals. I loved watching them. And then I think about the second year is when we started bird hunting, because usually we would start hunting like in January when most of the big game seasons were over. So it just gave us more time to be out.
Right.
But that initial bird hunting just kind of for fun has really become a obsession of mine. I took it and ran with it. And I think I am more of the bird hunter in the family than my husband is.
So what birds do you have by you? You have quail. Do you have anything else?
So we have quail, we have chukar. We do have sage grouse about 2 or 3 hours north of us.
Okay.
So around Las Vegas is not the greatest number of birds, which can be frustrating. But we are able to, I can leave my house and be hunting quail in like 45 minutes. But better numbers of quail would be a good 2 to 3 hours to like really get into multiple coveys within a few miles. 'Cause our coveys here can be very, very spread out. Like one covey for, you know, a good couple of miles. Like you can't just get out and walk and really necessarily hope to get into birds around here. You kind of have to find more water sources, and sometimes it's more driving than it is just getting out and walking.
Right. So is that what you're doing? You're scouting out different water sources to be able to find better bird populations?
Yes and no. This last year, we actually had one of the worst droughts that we've ever had since I was born here. We had a really good rain, the end of February, and it actually didn't rain again until this January at my house.
Wow.
So just extreme severe drought. So this year the birds were definitely more tied to water. But Nevada actually has over 900 guzzlers. I'm not sure if everybody would be familiar with what a guzzler is.
So I'm not. So I'm raising my hand if you can explain that.
Yeah. So actually, the Nevada Department of Wildlife, there's big game guzzlers and there's small game guzzlers. And the small game guzzlers are typically, they're basically a rainwater collection reservoir. That's for emergencies. These animals be there, but these guzzlers really help support their numbers in an extreme years of drought like this year.
Okay.
So there's like a big metal kind of just corrugated piece, and the water, it rains and it's on a slant and the water will drain down and be into like this big, it's usually like a concrete basin and it has a pretty small opening so that it doesn't evaporate quickly.
You know, I think I have heard something about those. And doesn't Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever do some work like that for situations like the drought in that area to be able to help sustain those populations?
I am not sure about this. I know the big game guzzlers, some of the bigger sheep foundations were flying water in with helicopters.
Wow.
Small game guzzlers, I'm not aware of any efforts to try and fill those. Mm-hmm. But I was, especially late season, probably about half of them were dry. Mm-hmm. So it was getting very, very concerning. Mm-hmm. But I've been out after this last rain, and some of those that were dry are starting to build back up a little bit of a water base in them.
Really interesting.
Yeah. And like, I think I mentioned when I started talking about this, the animals are still there. These birds, we have gamble quail here. They are tough, tough little birds. I think they can get still a lot of water from some of the plants that they eat. But obviously they can't go months and months without water. So these guzzlers are just here for backup. And they do help us as hunters because they do support more numbers.
Did you notice a difference in the population size this year? Were there less birds than you've seen in the previous years?
I was actually surprised at the end of the season. I was getting into some pretty large coveys for our area.
So what's large?
Probably one of the biggest coveys I've seen was probably 40 to 60 birds.
Wow.
There's cool. A covey, most of them are usually about 10 to 12 birds. And I couldn't help but wonder if some of these coveys are kind of joining to be in like more areas that have better water. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of just a contemplative thought. Because obviously I'm not a quail biologist. I would love to spend time with one out in the field because I have so many questions about these little buggers. But
we should have a quail biologist on, and then you can come on and just question them. Because I'm super curious about it too. I've never been quail hunting. I tried to get down there this year and it wasn't in the cards, unfortunately. But that would be really interesting. And it would make sense, wouldn't it, of just getting closer to the water because there wasn't a lot of it.
Yeah, because I'll find smaller coveys spread out through certain areas. And I mean, late season, they do start to end up in larger coveys anyway, because they're getting ready to breed. But this year, it just felt different. Things, and it's also different because, as everywhere, there's been huge increase in hunting pressure from people being off work and having more time. So it's just been a really odd year all around.
Do you normally run across people when you're out hunting, like in years previous to this?
Very, very rarely. I typically hunt midweek. I try to avoid weekends, but honestly, around here, we have very low number of hunters. So even on a like mid-season weekend, even bumping into someone else hunting isn't too common. Sometimes you'll see someone driving and passing on a dirt road, but it's not like a hunter at every water spot for sure.
Okay. How far are you typically walking in until you get to those areas from the road?
A lot of them, water source-wise, you can actually drive to, but typically we don't find birds on the water source. And there are people here, that's just kind of how they hunt, is basically by driving around, and sometimes they get lucky and sometimes they don't. I don't like driving. I don't like sitting for long periods of time. I want to be out walking. I love to hike. I can easily put in 8 to 10 miles in a day and have no problem doing that. This season, it's been a little harder for that just because of the bird, just because of our location, the birds are just so spread out that you could walk 8 miles and not see a single quail.
Wow.
Versus Arizona, I was javelina hunting in Arizona in January, and I was amazed by being in a place that is a little better quail habitat, higher numbers. There you can park and get out, and just as long as you're in a good spot that you know probably holds quail, we were getting into a covey on this hill, a covey on the next hill, walking another mile or two and finding another covey. So I think when people are typically thinking of quail, that's their experience.
Okay.
We're here, we're really having to work a little harder to kind of kick up some birds.
Right. So I keep getting drawn back to this allure of 40 to 60 birds in a covey. So we need to dissect this a little bit in my curiosity. So first of all, what are you shooting? Do you have over and under or a semi-auto?
I have over under. It's the CZ Upland Ultralight. It's a 20 gauge. I'm actually looking to change that. But as we mentioned earlier, I tend to start things the harder way. I definitely have been missing some shots, and I'm getting frustrated that I don't have an extra shot. So I might actually be switching to a 12 gauge semi-auto soon. But for all of these years, that's what I've been using, that same gun. It's simple.
Mm-hmm. So when that large of a covey gets up, you have two shots. Tell me when you're taking those, when you're seeing the first bird go up. Or are you waiting midway? Or are you waiting till the end?
So we are usually scrambling a lot. The two large coveys that we saw like that, we actually found while we were driving. So and both times I was with my husband, I wasn't by myself. We were scrambling to get out of the car, get Cole, who's three, in his backpack. And just get all our stuff together. So typically they've been running. So they will run kind of over the next hill, but they typically don't run too much further than that the initial time. So it gives you time, and we'll kind of position ourselves to where we both can get a shot. And usually we can get, when we get close enough, that's the second flush, because the first flush was from the car. The second flush, we will try and get our shots then, but then we will still continue depending on how large a covey is. A large covey like that, we will still, depending on how many birds we got, we will still continue to chase.
Okay.
Because of our low concentration of numbers here, we really are conscious of how many birds we take out of a covey. In previous years where we weren't seeing these real large coveys kind of all together at the end of the season, and it's only like a 10 bird covey, I really only feel comfortable taking one or two birds, because we want those birds to do well and have them there for next year.
Right. Good for you.
Yeah. And that 40 to 60 birds is unusual, though. That was in a place that holds a little better quail numbers than some of the outlying like outskirt places closer to town.
Okay.
And there I do feel, like I said, more comfortable taking a few more birds. But if we hunt one area and we're out there and we get four birds from a covey, I will try to not chase that covey again the rest of the season. We've gathered enough bird spots over the years, and we try and scout preseason. So we try and hit different spots.
Talk to us about the bird dog that's with you, chasing.
So we have,
pointing or chasing, which one?
She's a chaser right now.
Is she? Okay.
We have a lot of work to do with her, but, so Koba, her full name, I've always wanted a bird dog with a fancy name. Her full name is Lady Koba Gamble. But we really do just call her Koba. She is a wire hair pointing Griffon. She just turned a year old, actually New Year's Eve.
Okay. She's just young. Yeah. She's just a young girl. Okay.
So this was her very first season. And we have never hunted with somebody that's had a dog. Okay. So we've been hunting birds all these years and just dreaming of a dog that would point these quail instead of them popcorn flushing out our feet and surprising us and not mm-hmm. getting a chance at shooting them, and or just walking by knowing we're missing so many birds.
Right.
So we've been dreaming about this, the day of the bird dog pointing the bird, but we still have yet to experience.
Well, I can give you some pointers offline here when we get done. It's a couple things that can help her out. So yeah, no worries. She's young. She'll get
our
it.
Our goal this season was her was just to get her on wild birds, get her used to it. Her drive is intense. She's starting to find them. With the drought, I think it was also very hard because there was no moisture in the air. So even just using her nose, I think, was difficult for her because you need a little bit of moisture to try and scent. So,
well, and what are the temperatures there? So it's not only dry, but it's warm, right?
It is. September can still be in the 90s.
Wow.
October through January, it will get pretty cold here at night. We can get below freezing temps pretty frequently. Daytime fluctuates anywhere from like 40s to 70s. We can have 70 degree days at the end of January sometimes. But usually prime bird hunting season is a general like 50 to 60.
Okay.
So it's warm, probably really, really warm for you, but it's not excessive. It's not like San Diego warm.
Okay.
So,
well, and for a, you know, for a Griffon, that's warm. Are you carrying a lot of water?
Yes, especially early and late season. It's definitely a pretty decent amount of water.
Right. So you're carrying a lot of water and a toddler on your back. Is this?
Yes.
How many seasons have you been bringing him with?
So he actually turns 3 this Saturday. And we took him his first. So he was born in February. We took him that first season in October.
Okay.
Because he was big enough to be in the backpack carrier. He was holding his head up. Was honestly actually easier then because he was just so little that he wasn't strong enough to really pull his earmuffs off and protest if he was in his carrier too long. And
and now, I mean, at 3, are you going through the potty training stuff? Are you working on that yet?
I'm going to be really honest and tell you that I prolonged his potty training until after bird season was over because I couldn't quite figure out how we were going to make that work.
I love it. I love it. And I love your reasoning.
I even told my mom, she just looked at me like, she's like, you know, he's ready. And I'm like, yeah, but he's also very stubborn and he's not talking that much yet. So I, in my brain, I'm like, how is he going to be able to tell me exactly what's going on? And everyone's like, you're gonna figure it out. So we're gonna start that probably in the next month, but we were bird hunting at least once a week and usually for most of the day, and I was like, this just isn't the time just yet.
No mom shaming on that at all, because that is that is legit. I mean, it really is. And you know, our little one, she's potty trained, but you know, the amount of times you have to unload and load back up because mommy, I got to pee. Mommy, I got to go potty. It's different.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I'm not looking forward to that. He's, you know, he's over 30 pounds and taking him off and on is my least favorite part of hunting with him.
Right. Yep. I agree. No, kudos to you. I feel so often, you hear that phrase of, oh, we have kids now. We can't do the things that we enjoy anymore. And especially hunting, because it's a lot of things happening all at once. And you have a, you know, a novice bird dog on your hands. So you're taking that challenge of a lot of different things at one time. So
oh, we're like a traveling circus out there.
I love it.
It's frustrating because I do. You see people that are just having such great days and success. Mm-hmm. And we, this is probably, I hunted probably twice as much as I have in any other season. And I probably came home with less birds.
Mm-hmm.
Just
because you have to, yeah, you have to make some sacrifices, don't you? It's different.
And I don't even know how much of it really is Cole, my son. It's just a new dog. In general, mm-hmm. you give her time to figure things out. And if she's not doing the right thing, you don't want to reward her with shooting that bird. So it's been a really frustrating season for me. And some days even just not being able to find birds because they, earlier when I was talking about pressure, we weren't like with other people out there, but I could just tell from these birds' behavior that they were getting hunted so much more than previous seasons.
They were getting up a lot earlier.
Yes. Like they were just flushing so far out and just that they would run instead of flushing, and they were holding tighter than I've ever seen some of these quail hold before.
Hmm. Interesting. And you're going out there and doing a lot of this by yourself, right? You're finding your scouting areas. You're looking for those water guzzlers. Is that what the term is?
Yes. Guzzlers.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So you're doing all that. A lot of it by yourself.
Yeah. So, my husband actually works for the fire department. So his normal schedule is 48 to 72 hours at work.
Okay.
He's just there, doesn't come home. And I do work. I only work, about 5 12-hour hour days a month. So I have a significant amount of time off still. And if I always waited for my husband to take us hunting, we wouldn't be able to get out as much as I want to be out there.
And you had said that some of those spots you like to go to are a couple hours away. Are you camping when you're there and to be able to take advantage of staying a couple days, or are you going back and forth?
Both. So I have camped. I did a trip with just Cole and myself in Cova. And we did camp. We hunted birds pretty hard for 2 days. And I think this upcoming season, I would like to focus more on that and maybe going a little bit further and spending the night, but a majority of our season was just for the day. And we would get up real early, try and leave a good hour before the sun comes up. And sometimes I wouldn't come home till after dinner.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's a long day. And I mean, how's Cole doing with that, you know, with those long days being out there? Are you noticing this year as he's getting older, he's getting a little bit more, you know, wanting to get out and walk?
Definitely. Fidgety?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason why we're spending even a little bit longer days, is because I have to give him a really long lunch break to give him time. He wants to run and climb, and he sees Cova running around and he wants to run with her. And he's mm-hmm. definitely just not at that age where he can walk next to me while we're hunting yet.
Right.
But he does. We started camping with him when he was only 8 weeks old. If anyone's on the fence about, you know, worried about getting their baby outside, I almost feel like it's better for the parents to get out as early as they can, because everything from that point on just seems easy. Like, we've been there, we've done it. You know, we figured out things when they were really, really small. As long as you feel comfortable with, for some people, that's definitely not 8 weeks old. But your comfort level and your skill level, I think the earlier you can get your kid outside, the more comfortable you both are. You're like, oh, diaper change, no big deal. Oh, we're going to breastfeed in the middle of this archery hunt. Nah, that's not a big deal. Like, you just kind of go with the flow. And as they get older, you've already done all this stuff versus waiting until they're 3 or 4 to start taking them camping or going outside and hunting. And then you've had this routine for so long, and then it feels so out of your routine to suddenly be doing these things.
Right. And not just for you, but for the kids as well. They're so much more accustomed to that stuff. You know, it's like going to a completely new environment as a four-year-old if they've never done that before. So he's used to being outside. He's used to getting the diaper changes and, you know, out in the desert and then being put back in, right?
Yeah, sometimes it's windy and cold and but it's just kind of another day. He has his moments where he doesn't like to be out there, but honestly, the days that I take him bird hunting by myself, they're easier than the days I'm at home. Mm-hmm. He gets bored. It's monotonous for both of us. We just eat, doing dishes, playing, coloring. When we're out there, he's kind of focused and points at things. And is the last day of the season, he was just so intrigued by this hawk that was circling above us. And he's starting to see the birds and the rabbits, and he'll be like, quail, rabbit. And he actually was clapping when Logan shot a rabbit this last trip. But
that's so cool. And so the experiences that you're providing for him are, I think they're just absolutely amazing.
He loves it. And I asked him, I said, do you want to go out in the desert? Do you want to go bird hunting? And he knows what that means. And he 90% of the time says yes.
What are some of the things that you're hoping, you know, I'm sure you probably get some slack for it. And we might even have listeners that are like, why are you taking your kids out in, you know, all this different kinds of weather and terrain? Because I know I hear it. Do you hear it?
I don't think I have a big enough like social media presence to be getting some of that backlash. Mm-hmm. Probably the biggest backlash I get is from my mom. She's a trauma nurse, and so she's seen a lot of broken and bruised people in her life. So I try not to tell her when I'm necessarily going out, like that day. I'll usually tell her afterwards, and she's more accepting, like, okay, you're home, you're safe. She actually asked me once, she says, what if you are out there and you trip and you hit your head and you're unconscious and Cole climbs out of your backpack and he falls off of a cliff? And I'm just like, Mom,
that's really thought out.
I do realize that there are dangers, but I do a lot of things to prevent those risks. And obviously there's risks anytime. I mean, there's risk just going to Target that we could get mugged in the parking lot. I feel safer outside on a hill holding my shotgun than I do going grocery shopping sometimes.
Yeah. And I mean, weighing the risks and rewards, right? You know, having a kid outdoors, having those experiences versus being cooped up in the house on some kind of digital device or watching TV, you know, weigh it out. I know which way I would go.
For sure. And you know, what kind of a life is it if you don't ever take any risks? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah. I do my best to, I am more mindful now than I ever was on safety.
Mm-hmm. So tell us some of the things that you're doing for safety, like, and some of the gear.
So one of the biggest things that has gotten me outside by myself or outside with Cole is actually Onyx. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you use that mapping system.
Yep.
I feel, because I actually sold, I had like just a regular SUV, and I sold that for a more off-road vehicle. I have a 4Runner. Mm-hmm. And between my 4Runner and my Onyx, I can get a lot more places, which has really opened up a lot of doors for me to feel comfortable going out to these places. My husband can mark things and be like, okay, we'll sit down on the couch the night before, and he'll be like, do you remember this turn? We've been here before. I'm going to drop a pin here. And that's where we saw those quail last year. And like, he can just point things out. And then when I'm there, I can see the dot of me. If I take a wrong road, I could be like, oh, I actually meant to turn the other way. Like, it's so much more useful than just a regular handheld GPS. And sometimes I'll be in the middle of chasing birds and I'm busy and I'm getting all these texts. Are you okay? I haven't heard from you in an hour. But, and I'll just send them a screenshot. I'm right here. We're okay.
Yep.
So, and it shows where I am. And he's like, oh, okay. She's in that area where we talked about. And so right. just being able to share with people where you are too, it can help alleviate some of those worries. Another thing that I don't think I would ever feel comfortable going out with Cole without cell phone service is our Garmin inReach. So if my cell phone were to, if I lost it or if our, or if you just don't have service, a lot of times I don't have service. I can send full messages of what's going on. Cause we had just a spot before where you could send, when we were younger and didn't have kids and did a lot of backpacking, we could just send like a, we're okay message, but the inReach allows you to send full messages. So you can give and receive much more information. It's just like text messaging.
Is that, do you have that on your, dog GPS unit? Is that the Alpha 200 or do you have that separate?
No, it's a completely separate device. So okay. Yeah, we have Kova's, her collar, we actually got the more simplified, I think it's the 550.
Yep.
Because we have the inReach and OnX, we didn't feel like we necessarily needed like the fancier GPS version with hers. Sure. It just kind of points and tells us how many yards and which direction she is.
Right.
But with a Griff, they don't tend to range as far. I know there's some like bird dog meme pages that call them bootlickers, things like that. She's not ranging out like a couple hundred yards or, you know, just ways away like some of these other dogs do. So I haven't felt that we really needed a different collar for her yet.
Sure. What else are you doing gear wise while you're out there with Cole?
For his safety and just any taking kids out hunting, I think is ear protection. Mm-hmm. So we started before we actually started taking him bird hunting in the summer before his first season. My husband would wear him in the backpack and we would put earmuffs on him while he would cut the grass and just like kind of get him used to it in like 15 to 20 minute increments. So when we put them on out in the field for that first time, he wasn't like, whoa, what is this?
Right. That's clever. It's conditioning like you would with a dog. I like
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when he was younger, we would put earplugs in underneath his earmuffs because I was afraid of him pulling them off. Mm-hmm. And we did that his first two seasons because sometimes I would, I usually use my phone when I'm by myself and I'll put it with a camera on like reverse just to see him. Because it is really hard to see. You can't really turn your head and necessarily always see him. So I would check and sometimes his earphones are off, but his earplugs are still in. And sometimes he would get frustrated and just if we were out there camping, I mean, it's our second day hunting, he would just be mad and would not want to put his muffs on. So we did find this swimming band you can put over his ears. It's just like a little headband. And it's harder to pull off. And we would put earplugs in underneath that. And that would hold his earplugs in.
Okay. Well, that's a really good idea. I haven't thought of that one. And I always carry the two options, the muffs and the plugs as well. Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes there's days when she just continues to go back and forth between them because she's quite indecisive in general. But then you have the days where she's just not going to wear anything. And you know, you just go home. It's, I want it to be a good experience for her as well. Have you done that where you've just been like, okay, this is, and I tell her, I say, you know, mommy can't shoot birds if you don't wear those. And usually she'll put them on just for that reason, which I love, because I know she enjoys watching that whole scenario go down just as much as I do. But What's your experience with that?
With those long days, by the end of the day, sometimes they are just a little over it, which can be really frustrating here because if we haven't gotten into birds most of the day, And then I'm suddenly, and we finally found birds, and he doesn't want to wear his earmuffs, and you're just like, please.
I know, right? Right.
But usually with distractions. So he is the big, he likes to hold a toy. He likes to have his trains. He'll kind of like drive them over the top of my head while I'm looking for birds. So I usually one of the most important, like if I carry something he really, really likes and he's not in the mood, and I put his muffs on and then I give him something he really likes to eat. And then by the time he's done eating it, he's forgotten about how angry the earmuffs made him, and he's good for another hour.
Do you find yourself categorizing, you know, the likability of the snacks, where you're starting out with, you know, the ones that are okay and will satisfy, but then when things start to get rough, you pull out like the Skittles or the like not so healthy food just because you know special treat.
Yeah. We start with cucumbers and end with little pieces of chocolate. I have no shame in my game. Right. He is a really good eater and he eats really healthy foods, and he's eaten more wild game than most people I know. So I don't feel bad when we're out in situations that are tough giving him candy or a little piece of chocolate or something just to get him through to make it more enjoyable. Whereas if he were a really picky eater, then that might be a tougher situation where I wouldn't want to do that. But that kid eats more than a full grown man, so it's not too concerning.
It keeps him occupied for sure.
And even just like a small, like those little teeny tiny candy canes, like he's old enough now that I'm not worried about him choking on those. And that's just something to kind of get their mind off of their frustration.
But I did that this year. Sticky fingers in your hair, right?
Yeah. But he is, he does surprisingly well out there for long periods. And I think it's just because he's used to it. And now that he's talking more, I kind of ask him like, oh, do you see that bush or this, or, and he'll just be paying attention. And we try and like kind of play games. Sometimes I'll even sing little songs while we're hiking and necessarily not into birds. And that just kind of helps break it up and make things a little more fun.
Right. So you started like 5 seasons ago. Were you hunting while you were pregnant as well?
Yes. So I actually had to ask my OBGYN if I could be shooting guns while pregnant. And that was kind of an awkward conversation at first, but she actually thought it was really funny. And she was supportive of it because you know, now that you have, children and guns and pregnant ladies, they usually aren't things you think of together.
Right.
But I was determined to not. You know, I was having a healthy pregnancy. Like I wanted to be out chasing birds, and I actually had a doe tag. So I wanted to be able to hunt with a rifle, and she cleared me. She said, there's so much, you know, fat and layers, like the sound of it is not going to harm your baby. Cause I was more worried about the sound. So she gave me the okay, and I just had like a weight carrying restriction because I was asking about how much meat can I pack off in my, you know, pack off the mountain, and how much can I carry? And because I felt really strong during my pregnancy. So I felt that I was going to be easily capable of that, but she definitely limited how much I could carry.
Okay. So what was that weight? I didn't big game hunt, and I don't know. I was never given those restrictions. So were you not able to
remember off the top of my head, but I want to say it was probably like 20 to 30 pounds at the most.
Okay.
Which my husband, he solo hunts a lot, and he's packed an entire, you know, big buck out in just one trip. So he was like, it's okay. I'll do most of the packing, but I definitely wouldn't be out solo. Big game hunting, pregnant, solo hunting.
Right.
But I did.
Bird hunting, you would, right?
Yes. And I bird hunted up until I was basically 9 months pregnant when I was still bird hunting.
Yeah.
And it I felt it was better that I was out there Because I felt better up and moving, and especially because I was big. I had a big belly. Mm-hmm. I expected Cole to weigh a lot more than he did. When I look back on photos, and I was like, how was I running around the hills? Like, I gained, I think, like 50 pounds during my pregnancy. And I was a very healthy, wasn't eating snacks. I had this giant belly. Mm-hmm. And I was out running hills, chasing quail.
Right. And I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing because... because so my daughter was born in December, which is during season, and so I was mm-hmm. I was also hunting up until then, and I was huge. I also gained, I don't know, at least 50 pounds, but it was because I enjoyed having ice cream with brownies and syrup at night. So
I was pretty quiet. Like, I really tried to not overindulge, and that's why I was so surprised. I'm like, why am I so big? My body just held on to that fat.
I mean, I legit did that, and I was really hoping my baby was going to come out weighing more and take right? more weight away. Yeah, still working on that. But I love that you did it while you're pregnant. And we do that with our female, like our dogs. You know, when they're pregnant, we still hunt them. And some old timers will tell you that the puppies, you know, will, and whether it's the wife's tail or not, I don't know. But I like to think it's true that if the bitch hunts while pregnant, that the puppies are going to be, you know, great hunters themselves, great little bird dogs. And so my mentality was, well, if it works with dogs, then it's got to work with me. If I'm hunting while I'm pregnant, then my child will want to as well.
For sure. Yeah.
We shall see.
I know it is. I'm like, you almost want to be careful to not push them into it too much because you don't want them to hate it as they get older.
Right.
And that's why I want him to enjoy it.
Yeah. What's your plan for next year when he's four?
That is, it's definitely kind of the unknown because mm-hmm. he is getting to the point where he is so heavy right. that it's hard to really put in some miles with him. I mean, there were days that I was by myself and did 8 miles carrying him. But with the added water for the dog and the first aid kits and all of the gear, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And once he's able to listen to directions better, I'm hoping that we can start doing a little bit of walking next to me. But I mean, he can hike 2 miles, no problem off trail.
Okay.
It's just his frustration. He likes to go his own way. And then dealing with a dog on the ground and a child on the ground and the gun safety aspect of that is definitely very concerning. And it kind of depends on his personality and how well he listens, which is a four-year-old. He won't even be quite four. I don't think it's going to be a reality until he's probably closer to like 5 to 7. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to keep hiking this year and hope that I'm strong enough to keep carrying him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I ask you because I'm going, you know, with daughter about the same age, I'm going through that mentally right now of what's next year going to look like. Where she's not able to walk through the thick, you know, habitat of what rough grouse are in. So, and carrying her has been a struggle. I'm like, well, increase the exercise and strengthening plan. What are you going for, Lauren?
So
<Let's> train.
Yeah, no, you, I think, I started backpacking, when I was like 17. So I had this baseline fitness when I had him that I was used to carrying really heavy weight. And I'm in my early 20s, I was really strong and really good shape. But I think now, like functionality wise, I'm probably actually stronger. Like functionality training, you want to do, like, if you want to hike further in long distances, then you have to hike. Where if you're just going to the gym and and doing basic workouts, that's not necessarily preparing you for long distance hiking. You kind of have to keep doing what you want to do to keep your body in that type of shape.
Right.
The first year after Cole was born, I do a lot of trips without, just with my friends, just for my mental well-being, and my husband's really supportive of that. And we were out hiking this really, really steep area, and I couldn't help but think, my friend the year prior, she had been in a fire academy and was in the very best shape of her life. And the year prior, I was like a mushy postpartum mess, but I was keeping up with her every step of the way because I had that baseline fitness that I was able to just keep on hiking because I've been doing it for, you know, 10, 15 years now. So I think just keep on hiking, wearing that heavy, heavy kit on your back.
Yeah. Well, and as much as, you know, you're already getting out and hiking with him on your back, hopefully it just makes that transition through the year and you're really not going to have to change anything.
I still think it's important, you know, to take care of yourself and to strength train at the gym. And I use the Stairmaster a lot because I think that's the closest thing to being outside. The biggest struggle we have here, and it's going to be the biggest struggle with COVA this year, is the summer and the heat. It can get up to, you know, 120 degrees in July. So it's just not feasible to be outside exercising all the time.
I mean, you're chukar hunting with Cole on your back too, aren't you?
Yes.
Is your chukar country the same as like some of the pictures you saw that I was on, where it's like super steep and full of rim rock? And is that what yours looks like?
Yeah, definitely.
What the hell? You're so brave.
I kept thinking. I've been known to run with a shotgun in my hands and a baby on my back. I can sprint for a short period of time.
Oh my gosh.
Nevada Department of Wildlife, they don't actually even bother counting chukar in southern Nevada. Northern and central Nevada is definitely the chukar spot. And I love chasing chukar. But this year we didn't focus too heavily on chukar just because we're trying to, you know, get Kova into a good spot where she really is able, to be a good dog, and quail are just more accessible to us. But there were a few days that I went out because I love chasing them so much. And we did end up getting into some, and we were able to go and find them, but Kova didn't point them and they just kind of flushed. And I was like head down, trudging back to the car. Had done this huge loop with him and we missed them. But yeah, and we've put so much time and money and effort into having a bird dog, that we've read books and we've worked on so much training in the off season. But we definitely realize that we need help, and just a point in the right direction. And I think if we had a dog that was trained and we were to get a second dog, then they could kind of learn from that dog as well. But we're just starting with nothing. And it's a very intimidating thing, and every dog is different. And there's so many ways of training and training for different birds that it is a little overwhelming for sure.
Sure. And it's really not a common thing that dogs learn from another trained dog. So, you know, I think in most cases it turns into just more than one untrained dog. So, yeah. You know, yeah, because they do need, you know, like the individual training. Other dogs teach them a lot of things, but
not necessarily right things. That.
Yeah.
And that's my not being a, you know, new to the bird dog world, is that
right?
Sometimes you hear people, oh, well, I have this stellar superstar dog, and when I get a new dog, they can kind of see what they're doing. So I was under the impression that sometimes, you know, it's easier to kind of show them. It's like if you have a second child and your first child's already potty trained, your second child sees that and they're like, oh, okay, I can do that.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is every dog is different, and you're going to, you know, I'm sure you heard that 1,000 times, but they really are. So, you know, there's some dogs that will point birds after maybe their first or even 10th time coming across wild birds. If the dog's never had a planted, you know, bird put in front of it, and they're just only on wild birds, you know, some will tell you that they will just start pointing right away. But other dogs aren't like that. And you, I feel like you guys gave Kova a lot of opportunities to see if she was going to be the dog that would just start pointing because the wild birds taught her, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, clearly she just needs a little bit of formal training to help clean that up, and then you're going to be good to go.
Yeah. And that's what I didn't have the highest expectations for this season. So when I talk about my frustration, I kind of expected to be frustrated. But I'm hoping to, you know, just to give her the best opportunities we can, because we saved our quail wings, from the year prior, and we were hiding them in the yard, and we were teaching her. I mean, she's good at whoa, but her drive is so intense that when we're out there in the field, she's like, yeah, I don't know. I see quail and I'm going
right,
for them.
Right. And unfortunately, wings aren't gonna, you know, resemble situations and even the scent.
And exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's just what we had to.
Yep. But you, right. You did the best with what you had. So.
Yeah. So I'm actually really excited about your, some of your like interactive training.
Yeah.
That you're putting out, because there's not a lot of resources like that for people that are new in the bird dog world.
Right. And want to do it yourself and, you know, not necessarily want to or are able to send your dog to somebody. And mm-hmm. you're exactly right. That's why we're doing it. And, you know, the more we can teach people of how to do this at home with your dog, the better. Because as much as we would love to take everybody's dogs in and train them, you know, we're not set up for it. We don't have the time for it. So we want, even with our dog, your people that have dogs from us, like we want them to be successful and not have to send their dog away for 3 or 4 months to get there. Like, you can do this. Here's the tools.
Definitely. And I think too, as a dog owner, if you're able to train your own dog, you just feel that much better about it.
Sure.
Like, we've really figured this out. So I think with our second, when we decide to get another bird dog, that we would be, even though we've been hands-on, we would even take more of a personal approach to it as we kind of figure things out with her ourselves too.
Right. And I don't know your area, but it's also good to check out. Have you looked if you have a NAVDR chapter near you?
I haven't, no.
Okay. So that would be a great tool. And when we get off here, I can help you too, Lauren, to see what chapter would be near you. Typically, there's NAVDR chapters all over the U.S. So typically they have training days. Whether it be once a month, every other weekend, or every weekend, and you take your dog, you pay for birds, and you have, you know, anywhere from professional trainers to your average DIY gun dog trainer. So, you know, there to help you and walk you through the steps, tell you what to do at home.
Okay, great. Yeah. That's what we're willing for, any extra help and pointers we can, and just experiences, because we were considering just taking her to one of those like places where you do just pay for basically planted birds and you go out like a hunt. I'm brain right. farting on
No, like a game farm or a preserve.
Like a game preserve to just get her.
And that's tough too, though. You can give her a lot of bad experiences there if she's out just catching birds. Mm-hmm. So that's the hard part about putting planted birds out, you know, and you wouldn't be able to shoot them. So you're paying $25 for each pheasant you put out there for training. But if the dog catches them, then that throws away the whole point of you, you know, what you want to get out. get out
of
it.
Yeah, and almost learning bad habits versus
exactly
good habits.
Yep. But we can talk about this because I want to help you. I genuinely want to help you, and I feel your frustrations and all of it that you're putting into getting out there and the miles you're putting in. I mean, I bet it was a frustrating thing. So
yeah. And I think that's why we were ready. We're like, we're so serious about this that we don't want to be those people that have the bird dog that's not necessarily helping at all when we're out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you may have put a lot more birds in the bag this year without the dog, right? Because of the habits that the dog had.
Yes.
And that's not the point of having the bird dog with you. So some things need to be fixed there, and then it's a win-win, and it's a great experience.
Yeah. And I'm sure I'm not the only person that has had this experience.
Some of the
guests you have on your podcast, they're more experienced. They're on your podcast more to educate people. And I appreciated you asking me because I am new, for other people that don't have a dog or they're wondering how to get a dog, just to see that it's not always get a dog and you're going to have this perfect season and experiences. And it's a lot of work.
Oh yeah. No, Lauren, and you touched on exactly that there, and don't feel like you're in the rarity at all. And I'm going to be completely honest. I have a NAVDA versatile champion master hunter dog that is like the dog that's the love of my life. And she's got all these top titles, and my frustrations this year in hunting came from her and poor bird mannerisms. And, mm-hmm. and I put her back in the truck more times than I would like to share. Even the best trained dogs, right? The ones that have achieved all the titles aren't necessarily the dogs that can hack, whether it be different or new bird species, which is a lot of what my season was to me and my dogs. But regardless, they don't always do what they're told to do. So yeah. Don't feel like you're in any kind of minority here at all, because it is very common. And I think just huge kudos to you guys for being like, okay, I realize this and I'm going to do something about it, instead of letting the dog get away with it and go into another season and think that something's going to change, because she's young and you can correct it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, she is stubborn, to say the least. But she's stubborn in a good way, that she wants to do the right thing. She just hasn't learned the right thing yet. She wants to perform. She wants to make us happy. She's a really, really great dog. Never actually been around, like I said before, I've never been around other bird dogs. I've never actually even seen another Griffon in person. So all of this, just her energy drive home and the amount of exercise that she requires on a weekly basis, like we thought we were prepared for, and it was still more than what we thought.
Sure. Yeah. And it varies, you know, within the breed, all breeds. You know, you can have, you can read everywhere about a dog breed and think that they're going to be what you've read them to be, and they're not. There's so much variation within each versatile breed, for sure. How far did you have to travel to get Kova?
So her breeder is actually in northern Utah, and she was coming down our way for something. So she actually brought the dog to us, which is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
We had planned on driving up there and meeting the parents and everything, but my husband actually ended up being injured that week. He was having some neck problems, and the breeder just was like, I happen to be driving out that way. And so we just had to meet her like 40 minutes from our house.
Nice. Perfect.
So convenient, but at some point I would like to be able to meet her parents.
Yeah. Yeah. So getting into like some of the hunting that you do, I want to hear about some of your recipes, because I feel like you're a very self-sustaining family there. I know you have beautiful garden. You have chickens and you do the big game and the bird hunting. So I know you have some pretty amazing recipes you must do.
Yeah. So we go to all of this work to garden and hunt, and we definitely take food seriously. When we were younger, we would go to fancy restaurants, and we've always been very into food, and we've kind of just taken it to another level in the last couple of years. And it's not always the fanciest meals, but we do put a lot of effort into cooking and using the things that we harvest, whether it be from the garden or from meat in the outdoors. One of my favorite people to follow and use his recipes is Hank Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
I've made quite a few of his quail, rabbit, even kind of used his guidance for our sage grouse, because that's a really unique bird. And not a single thing I have ever made from him has been bad. It has actually, some of his recipes are so simple that they've surprised me in how just perfect they are. Mm-hmm. He does have a book that's mostly for small game and birds that is amazing. But we do a lot of our own recipes too. So when we prepare our birds, usually we don't necessarily prepare them in the field. We'll just bring them home unless we're camping, and we do tend to spatchcock them. Sometimes we'll separate the breast and the legs. Same thing with rabbits. Sometimes we'll save our rabbit legs and the quail legs, and we'll actually eat them like chicken wings. That's okay. One of our like bar food type recipes.
Okay, sure.
One of my favorite ways to cook birds is with a sous vide. You cannot overcook them.
I've heard that. Yeah.
So sous vide is one of my favorite ways. It's basically, you can vacuum seal, which is my husband's favorite way, but I prefer the stasher bags because they're more environmentally friendly.
Okay.
But you can just throw like a little pat of butter in there. We'll just have a few herbs from the garden, and it's basically just a pot of water at a set temperature. And you cook it for a certain amount of time. You can just look at what temperature and how long to cook a quail. And then you can just throw it in like a cast iron pan when it's finished, just to crisp up the skin. And that's just like a perfect, serve that with rice or some garden greens or some type of vegetable. And it's simple, but it's so good. And it showcases the flavor of the bird, because you don't always necessarily, we like to almost keep our meat simple, because like antelope, you almost don't even need to season antelope because it has so much flavor. So we've kept our meals pretty simple the last couple of years, and we eat a lot of just cuts of meat, not necessarily in like a casserole or a dish. But especially with birds, you can really cook them any way you can cook chicken. And I think a lot of people get intimidated with wild game and they try to find certain recipes. But really you just have to know what temperature to cook your birds to, and can still use a lot of your favorite recipes you would use other meats for.
Mm-hmm. I know. I love that. I love just that you keep it simple. And do you find that Cole takes to the game just as well as you guys do?
Oh my gosh. So the other night, my husband recently just got a javelina out in Arizona. And we were
cool.
We have heard things about javelina and the way they taste.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
But we made the tenderloins, which, because of where they're located in the animal cavity, if your animal is going to have a funny taste, it's usually you're going to kind of know it when you eat the tenderloins.
Mm-hmm.
So we cooked those javelina tenderloins, and we didn't actually make any for Cole because they're not very big pieces of meat. And he was stealing. He ate like almost all of mine. He was coming over and stealing it off the plate. He's naturally a big meat eater. I didn't try and force it, but he loves elk. He loves deer. He loves antelope. He loves all kinds of birds. He eats rabbits. We even eat squirrel. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, he's awesome. Definitely, he's open to eating beef and things. Like my mom, when she watches him, she won't eat any of our hunted animals. So, and he eats up her food, no problem too, but he's very open to food. So he has no problem.
Does your mom come over and just say, she's like, I'm going to skip this meal?
Oh, I'll send her photos and she's like, okay, what kind of Bambi are you eating today? You can invite me over when you're eating something normal. My mom's very like lighthearted and I can joke with her a lot. She's
sure. No, I'm like a super picky eater that way. So I was really nervous. I had sharptail and snipe for the first time this year. And I mean, if you do any reading or any listening, I just feel like I heard so much of that it's not good. And then I found out how important it was that it's just that it needs to be prepared properly. And I loved it. I loved a sharp tail. I loved the snipe. And unfortunately, snipe are very small. And my daughter, just like Cole, she stole most of it when we walked away. But yeah, I mean, I think that's just so much of it just needs to be prepared properly.
Definitely. I've overdone. 100%. I've heard if you don't like something, try it a different way.
Right.
And it might be much more palatable to you. Maybe just wasn't prepared correctly. I think a lot of it too, growing up, we never had food with bones in it. It was very, I call it nummy, very basic food. So my brain trying to wrap it around eating wild game, I kind of had like this mental block, like this is weird. Mm-hmm. And to break that mental block and just be open-minded is one of the biggest challenges I think sometimes people have when it comes to game.
Right.
I traveled to Hawaii with a friend and they were eating sushi. And I wouldn't even eat fish at the time. And I made them take me to a fast food restaurant when I was 16 years old after we went to this beautiful sushi restaurant.
Yeah.
So, and now I'm eating heart and like just all of these different animals. And I've come such a long way. And it's just really that my husband was able to, he's an extremely good cook and prepare it in ways that would be appetizing to me. And I just became more open-minded and excited about where we were getting our food from. And I'm excited for new cuts. Like the next deer that I shoot, I'd really like to save the caul fat to try some recipes with that. And just utilizing the whole animal and not wasting any of it, I think is really important if you're going to go to all the trouble to harvest something. Mm-hmm. We saved our quail and our chukar bones from any of the ones that we boned out this year, and we're going to actually make like a stock with them.
Cool.
Just kind of trying to utilize every little bit you can.
Yep. Is heart as good as I hear it is?
I really, really like it, and I was really, really nervous to try it. Mm-hmm. And my husband actually, his friends were hunting with him and he cooked heart for them. And I was a little upset. I was like, wait, you had heart without me? But it is better fresh, but we have had frozen heart and it actually saved. But we used actually like a Korean bulgogi recipe for it. And it was great. So and I've had it just salt, just plain old salt and pepper too. Like it's a different texture, but the flavor is amazing.
See, I think it's like the texture that throws me off on trying new things. That's what makes me nervous.
Definitely. And I think that too is really watching your temperature. Like you have to get certain meats require such the right temperature or they're over undercooked and that texture is just not right.
Well, Lauren, was there anything else that we should touch on that or mention that we haven't touched on already?
I think, you know, just one of the biggest things is to anybody out there that is concerned that their life is going to drastically be changed for the worse after having a child is not true. I was told my whole life, because I've traveled and done so many things and I've had so many people, do it while you can. Once you have a kid, you're stuck at home forever.
Right.
And I was very, very depressed. I was excited to have a child, but at the same time while I was pregnant, I really struggled with it mentally because I felt like I was giving up myself as a person and that I wouldn't be able to do any of these things that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
I was planning last minute trips to Iceland while I was 6-7 months pregnant because I thought I would never travel again. One of our last bird hunts, my husband got the stomach flu and we had to leave early. And I was sobbing the whole way home because I thought I would never bird hunt again.
Wow.
And I think that society just kind of puts some of those pressures on you and just ideas. But if you love something enough, you will find a way to do it and it's possible. And don't think just because you have a baby, you have to give up yourself. Things are harder, but it's possible. And sometimes it's more fun. You see things in a different way that you wouldn't have seen without carrying a small child around with you.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Absolutely. And I mean, now it's so clear, it's so evident how passionate you are about bird hunting. And I mean, I think I'm going through it right now where I'm feeling an emptiness with season being over. Are you experiencing something like that, trying to find fulfillment because it's like something that consumes so much of what you loved?
Definitely. So in the beginning of the season, I hunted 7 out of 10 days from the season opener.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like hammering to get outside. And my whole season, I was like, okay, we can go bird hunting Tuesday. When can we go bird hunting again? When it was just bird hunt, bird hunt, bird hunt. And my husband was almost like exhausted. Like, okay. Like how much bird hunting can we fit in and still have careers and a garden and a life? But it was like a, you know, kind of a deflated balloon that last day, just like, whoa, I can't bird hunt anymore.
Right.
But I think to turn it into a positive is just, there's so much work to be done for next season. And there's so much stuff to do in the off season. Just working on training Kova. I need to work on my own shooting. Hunting with a dog, I'm not used to. She is flushing them out a little further and just different shots. And I tend to focus on like shooting my bow and shooting a rifle in the off season. And I don't put as much work into my shotgun. And this year I love bird hunting so much and I'm not putting that much effort in the off season. So I'm really going to change that this year.
All right. Well, how can we find you and get in contact with you, Lauren?
I'm just on Instagram for now. It's Lauren Michelle with 1 L S.
And you have some awesome adventures that people would enjoy following, just as I have. So thanks for sharing your story and your rewards, along with the struggles of bringing the kiddos with and the novice dog. You had a lot of juggling to do this year, but I love that it never defeated you. You know, you just kept getting back out there and doing it.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if I'd rather be out there struggling than not be out there at all.
I love it. Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks, Courtney, again for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it and tag me and someone that would benefit from listening. Please help me out by giving the podcast a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening from and hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Be sure to join me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you're interested in some Bird Dog Babe swag or gear that I rely on, be sure to check out the store on thebirddogbabe.com. And most importantly, don't forget to support the organizations that are working hard to conserve the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt.